Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Pandemic Amplifications and features Angela Adams in an interview with Alex Ruffner.
Hello, I'm Alex, one of the editorial assistants of Imagine Magazine. Welcome, Angie. Thanks so much for joining me today on this Imagine podcast. So the COVID-19 pandemic has raised great concerns for children's mental health and well-being by caregivers, service providers, and professional organizations. And in this year's Imagine podcast series, we want to find out about the challenges that you face, how you promote good social and emotional development in infants and young children and their families, and what supports you give to their parents, caregivers, and communities. So we've prepared several questions for you. So we'll kick it off with an easy one. Where do you work and what is your role?
So I am a licensed clinical social worker. I currently work in Norton Maternal Fetal Medicine Specialist. So we're a high-risk OB office. I particularly specialize in working with moms with substance use disorders. And we have both the inpatient and outpatient program to support them.
When you read about the rise in mental health issues among children due to the COVID-19 pandemic, what is on your mind?
Well, not only for our patients, but I'm also a mother of young children. So the number one thing that I think about is the social isolation, being cut off from your natural supports, friends, your school system, maybe your faith, religion. I feel like there's a lot more isolation, even from extended family members. And I think it can particularly be hard for very young children who aren't eligible for vaccination. There's a lot of distance from extended family and maybe elderly caregivers who would be more involved otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's so important to remember. And it's not only isolating for the children, but also for the parents that are tended to go out and connect with those other people for fear of bringing something back home to their little ones.
Exactly.
So how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the mental health of your clients?
Well, you know, most of the patients I work with have dual diagnosis issues. So you're looking at not only a substance use disorder, but also, you know, anxiety, depression, history of trauma, a whole myriad of, you know, diagnostic issues. So it seems to be that whatever you were dealing with before, COVID has kind of amplified that. So if you were an anxious person or high strung, it's even more so now. If you were a person who was maybe depressed and tended to isolate, you know, even more so of that now, almost seeing some more type of like agoraphobic type symptoms from people because of the isolation. We've seen a lot of that. And as far as the addiction piece goes, it's a lot harder to access treatment. It's a lot harder to maintain people in treatment because so many of those in-person services have been cut back that it seems to be harder for people to connect in some cases.
That's so fascinating. You hear about the pandemic making a lot of things mental health wise worse and just adding stress. But I never really thought of it as intensifying already existing diagnoses or symptoms that a client may be having. So that's really interesting to see that direct manifestation of.
Right. And you think about somebody who maybe three years ago was struggling with just OCD type symptoms. They were germophobic or had fears of contamination. You know, imagine what that's like for those patients now, right? Now that even that's been reinforced in the larger society of the social distancing and the germs. And, you know, it's even harder to deal with those types of disorders now.
And I'm sure you're seeing a lot of patients who maybe were in a really good place before the pandemic, but then a lot of these things are resurfacing in a very intense way. And so they may be seeking new treatment or having to increase their therapy or something like that.
Yeah. And there's, you know, certain programs that have shut down or scaled back or, you know, put holds on admissions because they don't have the staffing to, you know, take care of people appropriately. So there's been a lot of barriers that have sprung up in relation to COVID.
So how have you adjusted your services to address these mental health needs that are now popping up?
Well, we have fully embraced and jumped into telehealth. You know, we had just really started a great outpatient program with, you know, a lot of different services right before the pandemic. And so almost overnight, we had to transition that into all virtual support. We were all reluctant at first, but in working with, you know, women in advanced pregnancy or young mothers who are also taking care of toddlers, it has actually turned out to be a very positive thing and something that I believe we'll always want to offer regardless of what happens with the pandemic, because it cuts out barriers of transportation, childcare, and it's easier for them to connect.
I love that. I feel like so many different disciplines are finding the same thing. And just from, you know, the virtual parent infant music group that I do, we're able to stay in touch with so many parents that either had to go back to work, but they're still work from home. And so they'll just like take their half hour break to come to music class instead of to go to the break room and get coffee. Or
absolutely. We do the same thing. We have a group at noon on Thursdays, and there are a lot of women who are on their lunch break or they're sitting in their car, or, you know, just we have one on Wednesday evenings and people are, you know, logging in right after work. So it does. The flexibility has been nice.
I love that. So what are ways, to help children or parents struggling with pandemic related stress, fear, or grief through some of the interventions that you provide within social work?
Well, and I think when it comes to infant mental health and very young children, I think how the parents are handling it or how the primary caregiver is handling it is really key. So making sure that, you know, children are not being overexposed to stressors unnecessarily. You know, we encourage parents to watch the news in private or read their news if they need to, because we have, you know, little 3 and 4 year old ears who may not be prepared to really process some of that information that's going on right now. So I think it's really important for the parents to be able to manage their stress, fear, and grief appropriately, and then model that for the children. I also think it's really important for parents to understand that, you know, even little kids are allowed to have big feelings. So really assessing that and making sure that they have the language to label those feelings and talk about those feelings, and look past what might look like acting out per se. Is that really some fear, anxiety, boredom, and trying to really address those underlying issues?
I love both of those. The first one, I love how you said to turn the news off or
read your news. Exactly. And that's something I do for myself. I know you and I have discussed that before offline, is that you can choose what you have access to. And when you're reading it, maybe there's not as an intense emotional reaction to where some of the news is very over the top and dramatic and scary for little kids.
Exactly. I mean, TV news is one of those things that, you know, they, at the end of the day, it's a production, you know, they're trying to get viewers, and it can be the same thing with reading the news too. They're trying to grow their readership. But I think it's important to stay informed, but it's also important to know that you can step away.
Absolutely.
And that you can take a break from consuming all of that information.
Absolutely.
And I also love how you give the suggestion to help parents figure out the root of maybe those big feelings that their kid is having, and think of it not as a tantrum or just that the infant's acting out or that the toddler is, you know, having a moment, but realizing that it could be coming from a place of fear and encouraging
or overstimulation, boredom. There's always so much more to it. That behavior I've always thought about is kind of, it's like the icing on the cupcake. So you have to figure out like what's in that cupcake. What's the real issue?
Yeah.
But I think for parents of young children, and I always talk with our moms about, you know, the importance of routine and consistency and structure. So important, especially at bedtime, to have a really good bedtime ritual to kind of wind up the day. And I think music can be a really great tool for that.
Yes.
To have your night song, you know.
We love music as a way to form a routine.
Absolutely. So
you've already kind of started touching on our next question, yeah, which is how can parents nurture their child's mental health? So helping them identify their feelings and the root of their feelings, creating and maintaining a nice schedule and routine. Are there any other suggestions that you give parents as well?
Teaching that, you know, emotional language for kiddos. You know, when I worked with very young children prior to the role I have now, I'm a big fan of those feeling charts, feeling faces, feeling charades, you know, so we can have and build that emotional intelligence and to help kids, the younger they are, know that there's more than just sadness, anger, happy. There's more subtle feelings. And I also think it's important for parents to know that for very young children, even early school age, you know, they're not going to tell you they're nervous. They're not going to tell you they're anxious. They're going to tell you their tummy hurts. They're going to tell you they have a headache or they're not hungry for dinner. And so, you know, being cognizant of those somatic complaints and knowing that that may be more about an emotional issue.
And that's so true. I think for adults too, we
get headaches, we get sick, our immune systems wear down. And
exactly.
Absolutely.
Or if we're super anxious and we've been tense all day, we don't feel like eating dinner.
Right.
So really taking a step back and trying to figure out, okay, is this physical feeling that I'm experiencing related to something physical or is it
or
something
emotional.
Mental or emotional? Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's important for families when the world feels like it's spiraling out of control and we got all this going on with COVID and the pandemic and everything else, you know, our home is something that we do have control over. And so we can control, you know, what kind of influences there are, what kind of nutrition we're giving to our children and keep that home a very safe bubble in the midst of all the craziness.
Yes, it is a very literal bubble these days.
Very literal bubble.
Yes.
And, you know, just like an interesting, you know, we've preached to our children about the social distancing and all of this from day one. They internalize that. We have a little one now who's just started playing basketball. And so kind of telling him, like, it's okay. Like, people are going to touch you and it's okay.
Oh, that's so hard. And I know we've talked about this before in other conversations, but we are entering a very interesting place in this pandemic where there is no new normal. This is the normal for our early childhood aged friends, because this has been going on for over 2 years now, which is a lot of times over half their life.
Exactly. And they're starting school and this is their norm. You know, for our kiddos that are in kindergarten through second grade, this is all they've known so far. So, you know, I think that is hard for adults. And you hear that all the time of when things go back to normal, but just accepting that we are where we are. And so we have to deal with where we are.
Yes. So how do you think we can best support communities to build sustainable mental health and well-being for infants and young children and their families?
Well, Alex, I tell you, I could talk all day about this one because it is a huge passion of mine is trauma-informed care. And so I think all of our providers, teachers, Head Start, daycare workers, everyone should be informed in trauma-informed care, not necessarily how to treat trauma, but how to recognize it and how to support children and families that do have a trauma history. And to remember that, you know, COVID has exposed hundreds of thousands of families to trauma and grief. And so it's safe to assume now for people that that's almost the norm, that they've experienced some kind of loss or trauma. So I think that foremost is very important. I think the medical field is catching up to trauma-informed care, but we still have a little ways to go. I also think it's super important to really focus on early intervention and prevention, and not just being reactive to the mental health issues that we see, but really early intervention and teaching and, you know, structuring things in a way that they are more trauma-informed and supportive.
Yeah. I think trauma-informed care is so very important because, like you said, I think everyone in some way has experienced some type of trauma throughout the past 2 years of living through this pandemic, parents and children alike. And along with that too, just being able to encourage families to reach out for help before there is a problem, not when there already is a problem.
Exactly. Exactly. And not wishing it away. You know, if you're 7-year-old has been complaining about stomach aches for 2 months, it's time to call the pediatrician.
Yes. You know?
And so not just wishing it away.
And it can be hard during this time too, because although we are more comfortable with coming back into the healthcare setting, so many people still want to stay away from this arena as much as possible. Absolutely. But it kind of comes back to the benefits of telehealth and how people can get that support without having to bridge that gap and actually come into a physical place.
Absolutely.
That could cause more stress.
And to know, for people that are hesitant about it, you still can get really good mental health care through telehealth. You know, when I worked in a rural community prior to working at Norton, we utilized telehealth for all of our psychiatry services, and it worked beautifully because it cuts down on the transportation barriers. Providers can see more patients more effectively, more efficiently, and it really does work.
That's awesome. So what resources do you recommend? This can be for parents.
Sure. As you know, Alex, I'm a big fan of the apps, you know, especially for our young moms who are, you know, very electronically savvy and smartphone savvy. The Calm app I really like, and Headspace are two of the ones that I recommend a lot. If someone is interested in finding a mental health therapist, I think Psychology Today is a really great resource. For your listeners to know, you can go to the Psychology Today website and find both psychiatrists and therapists, and you can specify what you're looking for, your zip code, your insurance, and most of those providers also will have a little bio so you can see if you might be a good fit with them, because you have to have a good fit and a really good therapeutic rapport with the provider you choose to do good work together.
I think that's a very important thing, especially as more people are reaching out for mental health support. You have to find the provider that works for you.
Absolutely. And don't wait, because the demand is so high and the providers are getting booked out. You know, so just making sure that you're advocating as soon as you identify a problem or even a perspective problem, that you're getting in to address it.
Wonderful.
Because we don't want someone to get to crisis mode and then they're looking for services, because that's not a helpful situation to be in.
Right.
And as far as addiction services, findhelpnowky.org is a really wonderful resource.
You can find Kentucky specific.
It's Kentucky specific, but you can find all services that you can imagine, from inpatient detox to outpatient to intensive outpatient. And same, specify your location, your insurance, and find who's taking new patients in real time.
Wonderful. I feel like a lot of people are reaching for other ways of coping, so people may discover that they have a need that they didn't before the pandemic.
Absolutely. And, you know, being friends with many other therapists, you know, people that may have been social drinkers before, and now they have a problem because they've turned to that as a tool, rather than finding a more appropriate, healthy tool.
Yes. So what are your hopes for these pandemials? Are you familiar with that term?
I am, and I kind of love it. I hope and pray that these kiddos are just incredibly resilient and flexible. Mm-hmm. And I think they will find a new appreciation of the simple things. Like, I know I've seen that with my own kids is, you know, yeah, we couldn't play basketball for 2 years, but now we're vaccinated and we're giving it a try. And like, they're just over the moon, where maybe 2 years ago, they would have taken that for granted because it's just something they would have done on a Saturday. Right. But I think a whole new approach of gratitude and appreciation. I think these kiddos have had to learn how to be very patient and also creative, you know, in their play, especially for kiddos that are an only child, you know, being creative and for parents to find creative outlets to stimulate them. But I think resilience more than anything is what we're going to see.
That is so encouraging too, because I feel like often we focus on what these children aren't receiving or the services that they are missing out on or what can't happen because of this pandemic. But oftentimes we don't think about all of the wonderful things that can come from it.
Absolutely.
Which is that resilience. Mm-hmm. I feel like over the past 2 years, I've become more resilient and learned to just not take advantage of any opportunity because I might be able to do it later on down the road. So I think that's incredible that these little ones could be getting that same experience at such an early age.
And just the flexibility, even, you know, for a kindergartner, it's like, okay, you're going to school today, but tomorrow we're going to be on NTI. And then hopefully you'll go to school next week. And they've kind of learned to just roll with the punches, which most adults can't even do that. And so I think there are some positive things there.
That's great. So can you share some advice for our listeners facing this mental health crisis? So this could be for fellow practitioners or...
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for people to remember that they are just not alone. Like, everyone is struggling in some kind of way. Everybody is carrying an extra burden right now, whether that be anxiety, grief, just burnout, you know, COVID fatigue. We're all kind of experiencing the same thing. So to know that you're not alone, and just to be kind to yourself, remind yourself that we are really, for our generation, living through an unprecedented time. We haven't seen anything like this in basically 100 years. And so being kind to yourself, giving yourself some grace, using your natural supports, and asking for help when you know things are too much to handle on your own.
I love it. Angie, thank you so much for sharing all of your insights. You've really provided a unique perspective because you have so much experience working with mothers specifically, but you also get to see their little ones through Zoom as well. So
I do.
You see the direct impact that all your hard work is having on these wonderful families.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Alex. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2022.